should be 137.
Yes.
The one we wrote. Yeah, I'll move that we approve section 5 as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carry.
See, it didn't hurt too bad.
I wonder, in looking back, in view of the amendment that was made yesterday on imprisonment, fine, and imprisonment, I don't think we need to change that.
Okay, now, section 6 and 7 go together. This sets out the criteria for sentencing dangerous offenders, and the following section points out the procedural way about it. This is, now, section 6 is almost identical to the Modern Sentencing Act, but not quite. And that is, under sub 3, I've changed that language, and you may think that that's too broad. But when we get to that, we'll expand on that a little bit. But this indeterminate sentence for a dangerous offender, then, the 30-year provision is the Model Sentencing Act. Now, I should point out, if you're not already aware, that the Model Sentencing Act provision empowers the court really to increase the sentence substantially more than we do under our classification of felonies and the 20 years that we already provide for a Class A felon. But this would enable the court to add another 10 years onto a sentence under certain circumstances. But the net result and the net effect would not be as great proportionately under our code as it is under the Model Sentencing Act, because basically they provide for a sentence of 5 years, except then they have what they call the atrocious crimes, which bumps it up to 10. But
in light of this section, that might be one that reduces the maximum.
Well, it seems to me, as I said last night, for all intents and purposes, we've really done away with the Habitual Criminal Act, because your enhanced penalty provision here only relates if serious injury was caused, or if the crime endangered the life or safety of somebody, or the person participated in organized crime. Now, if he was just an habitual criminal and independently and by himself committed numerous other felonies, you have no enhanced provisions. And similarly, we're doing away with the enhanced penalty provisions for the sexual offenders, which maybe that's what we want to do. But it seems to me that we should really give considerable thought before we completely get the habitual criminal concept. Now, I think it can be modified at some point, but maybe it doesn't have to be quite as strict as it is.
Now, you're absolutely right. This has no arbitrary enhanced penalty for repeaters.
It doesn't give a judge any discretion.
It doesn't give him discretion?
Well, I mean, for repeaters.
I agree with everything you said. I mean, this makes substantial change. Plus, furthermore, the maximum that even under these provisions that the court could give is 30 years, you couldn't go to life like you can now.
That doesn't really bother me. The elimination of the not less than twice the maximum, that doesn't bother me.
All I've done in this section is embody the recommendations of just about every, well, certainly the ABA recommendations.
But you forget that the Habitual Criminal Act, as it now is, was a product of the 5961 Interim Committee on Criminal Law, and that the 67 legislature gave it considerable study and modified it. And I'm proud to say that I feel now that I was wrong in voting against a modification of it in 67. So I think it's worked out pretty well, and I think I don't think it's been abused. And the additional 10 years doesn't bother me. But
what does bother you?
Well, what does bother me is you have a defendant that's been convicted of 6 prior felonies, and he has an abysmal record, and everything in his record indicates that this person is an habitual offender. And he's convicted.
Are you segregating, John, the guy who is, are any of these offenses involving serious danger to the person?
Well, I know the thing that people throw off is the check writer, but I'm thinking about, say, the unarmed burglar, the unarmed robber. I had a case where a guy has spent 43 years of his life in various prisons, starting out in Joliet when he was 16 or 17. He's released. Murray State Pen, he gets placed at the Hoyt Hotel as a janitor. He works there for a month, and one night he goes up to the desk clerk and he says, "Give me your money." He was an employee there. And they recognized him. Of course, he didn't have a gun. He faked it like he did. They gave him $1,200 and he left. And he was picked up. Well, he was handled as an habitual criminal because the court found that he just couldn't live in society. And he had about 9 or 10 or 11.
I still don't see your problem.
That wouldn't be covered here, Tony. He could only be charged, he could only be treated for, he could only be sentenced for the crime charged and not treated as an habitual offender under this dangerous.
I'd like to hear from John why he left it out. It would seem to me if then you'd cover it somewhere. Well, why don't we have the official film?
30 years seems awful severe to me, even for the profession.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, what John's saying is that he may have had some other serious ones in the past, but now we're coming up on the fifth crime.
The fifth crime. Second, John, and I agree this thing. Maybe it doesn't cover that, but let me ask you first, are you saying that this should be covered for the guy who has been a professional shoplifter? Or a professional check writer?
I'm not so much
he's been convicted 2 or 3 times of the crime, but still should that guy, he's never...
I'm not so much concerned
about
I'm not so much concerned about treating the habitual shoplifter or the habitual check writer. I'm concerned about 2 things. I'm concerned about the habitual nonviolent burglar, the habitual nonviolent nonviolent robber. I'm concerned about the habitual nonviolent sex offender.
Well, all right, let's talk about, would you think that the professional second story man never uses a weapon, but he's a professional burglar.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think very definitely this is one category.
What's
that should be subjected to the imposition of an enhanced penalty.
What amendment did your concern prompt you to suggest, then, John?
I guess I'm talking in terms of a fourth category, and I don't know exactly how to put it. I don't exactly know how to phrase it.
There is a provision in, on page 25 in Monroe Penal Code, perhaps, John, in the beginning of what you're after, section 7.03, subparagraph 2, I think, is what your
page 25?
Yes.
I'd go for the guy who had previously been engaged in crime. Can you rip that? I'm sure I'm going to go for it.
Well, now if a man is previously being convicted of three felonies and the last conviction occurred was not more than 7 years previous to the incident crime, then the district attorney can ask the judge if the judge wants to entertain habitual criminal proceedings. And if the judge does and finds the defendant guilty of being an habitual criminal, then the judge sentences the guy to life or not less than twice the maximum for the prior charge. I'm not saying that we should perpetuate that, but I'm saying that 10 years in addition to the maximum for the instant crime is fine. But I'm saying if the guy has, well, there are two things. Three prior felonies. That's the one thing. And the other is the sex offender.
Of course, the sex offender probably would be picked up under this as a felony in which he caused or attempted to cause serious physical injury to another.
Well, yeah, that's what I felt.
Probably.
Probably get the sex offender on something like that.
I don't know.
I suppose the guy's a sex offender, and for the first three falls he has, but for some reason or other, either it was before we've enacted this law or he isn't picked up. The fourth one is for a non-violent crime, but it follows a pattern. And of second story man burglary, or faking the armed robbery, or whatever it is. I just wonder why we abandoned. Is it that you object to the habitual criminal? I mean, is that, why did that fall out of the criminal?
No, it's not that I object to it. I just incorporated what I felt was a reasonable approach suggested by the Model Sentencing Act. That's all. I mean, I didn't.
You didn't pass judgment one way or another?
No, I didn't. No.
Did anybody go on with?
Well, I didn't leave it out inadvertently. I was aware I was leaving out habitual offenders. I mean, just the
straight, mentioned
this straight repeat offender. Yeah.
Did anybody be willing to go for subsection 1, struck the words in which he caused or attempted to cause serious physical injury to another?
Why?
Sentence for a felony and the court finds he is suffering from a severe personality disorder.
You mean you don't want to confine it to those cases where he attempted a serious physical injury upon another?
In other words, this gives the court, if the guy has committed a felony and the court thinks this guy has got a dangerous propensity for criminal activity and he's got to go through all this examination and so forth, work with him away for 30
years. When is this severe personality disorder? Is a sociopathic personality a severe personality disorder?
Of course, sociopathic is one of the terms of art from the soft science.
Well, the only point is, Jim, you've got the same thing here. The defendant being sentenced for... Well, all right, suppose he had one other qualification. Would you go this far, Jim? The defendant is being sentenced for a felony which, or has been in the past, convicted of a felony in which he caused or attempted to cause severe physical injury or not.
Well,
you've got this in
with or without
the only thing is I'm saying, all right, at some point in his career he has got to have taken the overt step of actually of being convicted of a crime involving
prior to this particular charge.
Yeah, either it's this charge or sometime prior he was convicted of one involved severe.
With or without this proposed amendment, we are going to still have to come head on this question you raised.
Oh, sure.
The first suggestion we made, well, or either one of them, as far as I'm concerned, perhaps solves the question I raised. It may be felt that really makes it rougher, makes habitual criminal law more of a reality than it presently is.
Of course,
I'm not very prone, frankly, to putting a professional burglar
What are the crimes? What? What are the crimes which would normally be comprehended within this language?
What?
Under sub 1?
Under sub 1,
yeah. I assume assault or armed robbery or...
Forcible rape. Forcible sodomy.
Aggravated assault.
First degree assault.
With armed robbery come under?
Come under 2.
Endangered the life or safety of another.
Yeah, they have to have a prior conviction.
Yeah, he does. Right.
Mm. I see, there is a little different standard there, isn't it? Endangered another. What, when you say endangered, would you mean armed robbery? Because.
Yeah, or it could have been arson, for example. This is one of the crimes that the Model Sentencing Act notes. That he may not have intended to injure anybody, but the crime he actually committed did, in fact, endanger the life of somebody, even though he may not have intended to. But even there, they tie it in with a previous conviction.
Well,
but the previous conviction under sub 2 does not have to be a dangerous crime in itself. You notice the language is used. Has been previously convicted of one or more felonies.
Yeah.
So in that case,
my thought, Mr. Chairman, is that there is some stage at which, regardless of the fact that you're in the weakness in the science of psychiatry and so forth, there is a stage in which society should be able to take over or exercise extraordinary custody on an individual. And it seems to me, if he has committed a felony, and if anywhere during his career, either this particular felony or a past felony, which he has endangered someone's life, and the court finds that he is, using the language here, then it should be able to.
Don, do we define serious physical injury elsewhere?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Do you happen to call upon me?
Yeah, well, I can tell you.
Do you want me to make a motion? Just to get something in front of us?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Go ahead. All right, I will make it in this form. Subsection 2. The subsection be added, I'm not sure, you may be able to modify it in 1 or 2. We'll read as follows. The defendant is being sentenced for a felony
in the court
in which he that seriously endangered the life or safety of another, or is being sentenced for a felony and has been previously convicted of one or more felonies that seriously endangered the life or safety of another, and the court finds that he is suffering from severe
personality disorder indicating propensity towards criminal activity.
Well, I would agree. I would say that captures the essence of what I was striving for. I'm not convinced, however, that it can't be handled with a framework. But he said that there may be either one or two.
No. The Model Sentencing Act uses serious bodily harm, and I changed that to serious physical injury because that's a term we have defined. So it would
be dealt with in subsection 2. Let me reword it within section 2. The defendant is being sentenced for a crime that seriously endangered the life or safety of another, or is being sentenced for a felony and has been previously convicted of one or more felonies that seriously endangered the life or safety of another.
And then the personality.
Yeah. What that means is it's either as it is under subsection 2, or secondly, he's being convicted for a felony, and he had one previous conviction of where he's endangered the life of another, and the court finds he's suffering from a severe mental disorder, the court sentenced him for that.
What have you added? If he's now being sentenced for that, and this can be done, what are you adding to it by saying that if he is now being sentenced for something in which he endangered the life of another, or if he has previously been convicted of a felony. What are you adding to it?
Well, no, he added another phrase and then said, and has been previously convicted. The phrase that he added, I think, if I recall correctly, was one to try and pick up the habitual criminal.
Well, all I'm saying is, in the second one, suppose he's picked up on robbery on the second go-around, but he has a previous conviction in which he has endangered the life of another.
Oh, well, you didn't...
I switched it around from what I have. I mean, in other words, the way I have it, it says that the instant crime he seriously endangered had a previous non-dangerous felony, and you're saying...
I kept that and added this in. In subsection 2, you go clear down the language of another.
And then
I would add, or is being sentenced for a felony and has been previously convicted.
Oh, I see.
Well, that's going to make the wording awfully awkwardly, because the way it presently is, you need two things. You need a present crime, which is a serious danger to life, plus previous conviction.
Right.
And then the personality disorder. But if you put in a present...
Well, maybe it ought to be a separate subject.
I think,
all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about this language.
Serious physical injury. In view of the definition.
What is the definition?
The definition says it means physical injury which creates a substantial risk of death, or which causes serious and protracted disfigurement, protracted impairment of health, or protracted loss or impairment of the function of any bodily organ.
Let me say this, Jim. I was using the standard in subsection 2, which is just seriously endangered the life or safety of another.
Well, I understand that. But I think seriously endangered the life or safety of another is a much more easily applicable phrase than the attempt to cause serious physical injury to another.
Well,
AWDWN. Furthermore, I'm trying to think how this would arise. In other words, if the defendant gets 10 years added on for 25 years,
I got it right.
And is he going to be able to appeal and urge that, in fact, the present felony is not one in which he attempted to cause serious physical injury to another. Or...
Well, that's what I'm trying to get away from. He's convicted now of a felony. And he's previously been convicted of a felony in which he endangered the life of another.
John's
convicted of a felony and has previously been convicted of one or more felonies seriously endangering the life or safety of another.
But we're still not getting at the habitual old same story, man.
I want to keep him severed because I'm frankly not quite as convinced on him. That's why I want to keep this one separate.
Well, what hasn't he paid? How can he? The way I look at the habitual one is the one that just can't stay out of crime, sort of putting him away. But to have a previous assault, why sock it to him just because he had an armed robbery and now he's the first time endangering the life. Seriously endangering the life of others. Now he commits just a simple felony that doesn't endanger, and you hit him with a 10.
There's a third condition, though. He's got to have this personality.
Well, of course, that assumes that that's worth a whole heck of a lot.
Well, I figure if the guy is up for, he's up, this is his second felony he's been convicted of. The way I look at it, psychiatry is still an art. This guy, this is his second go around. He's at least once endangered the life of another. This is the time where rough justice is using time in society.
Theoretically, though, the first one he paid his debt on. Let's just say the first one is endangering the life. He learned his lesson. If he ever falls into crime, he ends up endangering the life of anybody else. So he runs out and does something that couldn't possibly, under any circumstances, involve injury to any person. And you say, okay, buddy, we're going to relate clear back to the person for which you paid your debt, theoretically, and we're going to sock it to you.
Only on this finding over here, though. Which
maybe he'd been rehabilitated and decided he was just going to commit non-dangerous crimes.
I guess we're going to have to put it. We have to put it in rehabilitation.
But commit a crime with a loaded gun because you don't want to get charged with murder, which is a fact, I'm sure, is a realization that there is some selectivity among criminals. They're not all on heat of passion.
Well, this does it. What I'm saying is that this is the one time you've got this guy, the psychiatrist says, look, if you let this guy loose, he's very likely going to commit a very serious crime.
Why don't you just do it on the first time he commits a crime and danger the first one?
Maybe that was committed. You've got him under that under subsection 1.
Well,
the first time, you've already got him because got a built-in enhancement of the penalties because of the classification of the crime itself.
Yeah, maybe, but it was
it's a first degree.
Maybe it was a conviction in another state. You see. Of course, I see that. I see lots of problems that haunted me when we draft a serious physical injury. You've got somebody.
I don't think Greg would qualify under that definition.
I think it didn't end up the way we made it. Did we try to make it qualify?
You don't know. I'm not sure.
Substantial risk.
This is a sticky baby.
Well, of course,
serious or protracted.
We use forcible compulsion as our term in rape, and we don't require physical injury to commit the crime of first degree rape.
Rape wouldn't come under serious physical injury.
No, it wouldn't. I agree with you. I agree.
So you'd have assault with a dangerous weapon. Assault with intent to kill.
Aggravated assault.
Yeah.
Beating up somebody.
EWBW.
Well, hit somebody with your fist.
Assault with a dangerous weapon. Well, that by terms it means it's likely to cause death or serious bodily harm.
It could be biting somebody's ear, impairment of the function of the bodily organ.
Mm-hmm. You want to go beyond that definition?
No, I want to
broaden it.
I want to point out that this language is pretty vague, and if you sit down right now and try to identify the types of crimes which would bring a defendant under sub 1, that I'm not at all sure you can do it, and I think the court is going to be in the same dilemma, or same position, when they...
Would you go for the endangered standard under sub 1?
You mean under sub 2?
No.
No, under sub 1.
Placing the endangering in sub 1.
Well, I think that standard is, I think that you can take a given crime and more nearly tell whether it does or doesn't fit into that standard than the causing serious physical injury standard.
Well, would you accept sub 1 if it said the defendant is being sentenced for a felony in which he has caused or attempted, or in which he has endangered the life or safety of another?
Well, in which he has endangered or attempted to endanger the life or safety of another.
I wonder if
that would include causing physical injury, serious physical injury.
I wonder if you couldn't, perhaps, as long as we now have our crime as well classified, if you couldn't merely put into this section the specific crimes.
535B?
No, well, let's say you put in rape, armed robbery, first degree arson.
Like we listed for felony murder.
And so on. Just put them in if he's being sentenced for A, B, C, or D.
Yes, sir.
And the court finds he's suffering from the personality disorder. I would think that he would more nearly reduce the uncertainty of the application of the section, and I suspect that the number of crimes we're talking about is not very large.
Well, I wonder why.
The reason I say this, I should expand it to this extent. I'm very suspicious of reports from psychiatrists, and under the Indeterminate Sex Offender Act, indeterminate sentences, the magic words is if the court finds him to be a menace to the health and safety of another, or some kind of thing like that. Look at
that. Yeah,
137, 115.
How does that read? It's very, very weasel worded kind of thing. And I get these reports back from the state hospital,
it's 111.
We get the point.
Menace to the health or safety of others.
Yeah, menace to the health or safety of others. And I'm afraid that this language is even less susceptible of objective measure.
Well, how do the subcommittee members feel about that, of listing specifically the various crimes here instead of trying to generalize it?
Before you poll us, I'm wondering if we couldn't achieve the same thing and create less problems for ourselves, the courts, if we completely rephrase this and do it in terms of the court may sentence a defendant to an indeterminate sentence of up to 10 years more than the maximum for the principal crime in following instances, and get this business of severe personality order out of it. or severe personality disorder.
Or we could just forget this full section 6 and retain the habitual criminal.
Right.
Let me see the habitual criminal.
168.
Some of the, now Michigan, for example, just threw them out completely. It didn't put anything in their points at all. They just got rid of habitual criminal and sex recidivist statutes altogether. That's the only going to be
part. Right at the end of the book.
New York refused to go for this enhanced penalty because they had all kinds of problems in connection with the determination of it.
Well, I see some real problems in the court having to determine what is and what is not a severe personality disorder. And I think that it has to be arbitrary in a certain sense, and we've got to define our arbitrariness right here in the statute and then let that go.
Well, I thought the judges would go for this because this was drafted by the Advisory Council of Judges.
I'm still worried. There is a point you get the guy in front of you who's committed a dangerous crime, and the psychiatrist tells you this guy is loony and is probably non-curable. If you ever release him from prison, you're going to commit another crime. You don't have that happen too often. Once in a while, you do.
Tim, how many times?
I just think we've got to have some kind of remedy to take care of.
I just don't want to put that much power in the judge to have him make that determination.
Oh, now, don't.
How often
have you been at the prosecution personality
since we repealed the mandatory institution?
How often what?
How often, how many times since we repealed the mandatory directive in 67 have you permitted the district attorney to institute visual criminal proceedings?
3 or 4 times.
And there have probably been several hundred cases in front of you where the defendant had 3 priors and the DA said, Your Honor, the defendant would qualify for institution of enhanced penalty proceedings. Do you wish me to institute it? Happened there.
Yes, I wouldn't say several hundred.
Well, probably at least 100 or perhaps
50 to 100.
It says, the Model Sentencing Act, focusing on the danger potential of each individual defendant, requires a judge to accept outside assistance by conditioning the imposition of a long-term, and of course they build it into a state diagnostic facility, but I didn't do that, but so we don't really have one, but there are affirmance of the judicial finding that the defendant suffers from a severe personality disorder, indicating a propensity towards criminal activity. I mean, they thought it was meaningful language, and that it was workable from the standpoint of the psychiatrist and also from the standpoint of the judges. So
how did the psychiatrist feel? Do you have any way of thinking? In other words, I listen to them tear apart our judicial standards on responsibility or culpability, whatever it was, and are we not filling in another set of words that the psychiatrist will say can't be used, and got to use their own words of words? And, the judge right in the middle again?
Well, apparently other states have.
I suppose you'd get probably most psychiatrists would say that a sociopath is not a severe personality disorder, as well as a personality disorder is not severe.
Or it may have nothing to do with causing to
call it. Well, of course, you see, most of their definitions are, in my opinion, are useless anyway. When they say a guy is a sociopath, what they're saying is this guy's broken the law.
He's antisocial.
Hell, I know that. That's the reason down there being looked at.
You know, I think that the present habitual criminal latitude that we have is preferable. I'm not at all, I'm inclined to think that maybe this is even more stringent because it permits enhancement after the conviction of the instant crime. And here's what New York says. A persistent felony offender is a person who stands convicted of a felony after having previously been convicted of two or more felonies as provided in paragraphs B and C. It's paragraph B. A previous felony conviction within the meaning of paragraph A is a conviction of a felony in this state or of a crime in any other jurisdiction provided the sentence is to run in excess of 1 year or two, and the defendant was in prison under the sentence prior to the commission of the present felony, and three, that the defendant wasn't pardoned, and in sub three, I'm losing myself as well as you.
You never had me, baby. I was lost at the outset.
Give me an example of what, John?
Well, what I'm saying is this is kind of what ours is. Why don't we just say that a court may consider enhanced penalty provisions if the defendant
is a bad guy.
If the defendant has had three or more prior felony convictions, and the last one was less than 7 years or less than 5 years before the commission of the instant offense, and that if the court wants to enhance the penalty, it can sentence him up to 10 years above the maximum of the crime charge.
Well, now, why not just retain the Habitual Criminal Act and instead of life, reduce it to
30?
Yeah.
10.
Leave the same procedure in and everything else. Would that be simpler? Except that your Habitual Criminal Act for your second offender even may not give the public the kind of protection from a really dangerous individual that you'd have under this proposal for the Model Sentencing Act.
Or the first offender.
Or the first offender. Or the first offender.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
That's mine.
Yeah.
Well, all right, then how is the judge going to make that determination?
However, if you go to the indeterminate sentencing law, where he gets sentenced to not less than the maximum for the crime charge, the protection for the public rests with the parole board. Which presumably isn't going to release him if he constitutes a menace. And in that event, if it's for a crime...
Well, there's still maximum, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but if it's a crime endangering the life or safety of somebody, it's going to be a C or an A, or a B or an A felony, so it's going to be 10 or 20 years.
Well, unless you do it at that level, the parole board, you're going to be granting this... imposing upon him the obligation to make the determination, whether it's from a psychiatric examination or otherwise, whether this guy is dangerous.
Well, at least you're giving the judge some help here.
I really would like to have subsection 1, and the only thing is I would broaden it to include the endangering concept, because I think that there is an occasion where this arises, and when it does arise, I think the public is fully entitled to protection, and I agreed that the standard is difficult. Any standard where you've got to use psychiatric help.
Well,
but I think where you use this, and this where certainly on the first offense, the only time the judge is ever going to use it is where the psychiatrists are pretty.
Is court going to
clear cut their opinions on the guy?
Is the court going to issue finding fact with respect to what a severe personality disorder is?
Yeah.
And then is the appellate court, there's going to be a right of review, and presumably the appellate court's going to be able to overturn that, right?
Yeah.
Do we not think it's meant to create problems by the use of that language in the statute?
Why? Well, right now, I would assume on the first offender one, the case you're going to use it on is going to be during the third trial. Because I don't think any judge would want to use it.
particularly if under one, we list the crimes that you want.
Yeah, I kind of think, Mr. Chairman, that if we listed the crimes under one, and leave the rest of it the way it is, I think I'd probably go for it. Even though I have real doubts about this vague language.
Well, what crimes would you list?
Oh. I list
impersonating a Jew.
Manslaughter.
What? No, he didn't cause him serious physical injury because he caused the death.
No,
I'm not so sure I would list manslaughter.
We may have a 10-year maximum of manslaughter, and the person may be a real menace. And you might want to enhance it.
Oh, I kind of think I'd list serious assault cases. Probably armed robbery,
which we call robbery in the first degree.
So you're talking in terms of levels. You're talking about the intentional and knowing crimes. You're not talking about reckless crimes or negligence.
Yeah, that does come under two, under sub two, George.
I can see where a reckless crime, like manslaughter committed recklessly, could be determined the dangerous kind of guy who I'm doing this.
Well, that's why they had sub two in different kind of language than sub one, to get the guy who maybe didn't intentionally want to hurt anybody, but nonetheless he committed the crime, the kind of crime that did.
I think you might include first degree arson too, or whatever we now call it. Anyway,
it sure wouldn't go down any further than reckless.
The arson involving dwelling houses. Yeah, I suppose you'd say was the ones where they were intentional and those are three or four.
Rape.
You have rape in the first degree, sodomy in the first degree.
Are these all Class A or something?
Well, I would think we would classify it as Class A, or those two certainly. Mm-hmm. Assault in the first degree.
Burglary in the first degree.
Isn't it almost all your Class A offenses?
Yeah, couldn't you just say Class A?
I bet you made a review. I bet you came up with
it. You could almost do that.
It would be a Class A offense.
If we knew how we were grading those, I would think all those I mentioned are going to be Class A felonies. First degree kidnapping.
Extortion.
That would include manslaughter, I would assume, because manslaughter is a Class B in most categories.
Well, could we flag this with that in mind, that we may be able to pick it up just by using a Class A felony?
Would you say, sentence for a Class A felony, and the court finds he's suffering from a severe personality disorder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you'd have two...
Leave two the way it is.
Actually, that probably would be a Class A felony. Seriously endangered.
Well, it might not be, because it might be, for example, manslaughter.
Or it might be one of your arson offenses. That would probably be a first degree arson.
I don't see what you need two if you're going to make one the way you are.
Well, you got to...
It's your broaden one.
It was the criminal that used the prior conviction to do it, too.
Yeah,
no, but I agree that a different concept should be applied.
I agree with what Don says on that, but the two is going to pick up the ones where it may be non-intentional, but
put them under one. Why would you get the reckless, for example, the reckless conduct, only because they committed another previous felony? Seems to me that's not a very sound way to distinguish between the two.
Well, Class C, subsection C here, hits right at the check burglar, doesn't it?
Now, Saul Rubin says...
Class C felony.
Excuse me.
One to be a class sub 3. Class C felony.
Where is...
Sub 3. Defendants being sentenced for conviction of felony committed as part of continuing criminal activity in concert with one or more persons. And there's a nest of guys that are involved in stealing payroll checks, forging them, and passing them at Fred Meyer stores.
Yeah, I think the language...
I think you're still better off to retain the Habitual Criminal Act. Forget this.
I'd incline to agree with you, Tony, but for the time being, I'd go along with a suggestion to flag it, maybe as Class A felonies, and come back after we classify it.
Well, I think there are two things, two reasons I think this is better than the Habitual Criminal Act. Number one, it allows you to identify the dangerous offender the first time around, or at least make an attempt to do so. The dangerous guy. And secondly, it doesn't require a separate procedure and pleading on the part of the state. This allows the court to go ahead on its own.
I'm wondering if that's not going to be susceptible to judicial attack. Has this ever been tested, this procedure?
Why would it be subject to attack?
I don't know.
Well, a lack of due process.
What do you mean, lack of due process?
And there's no...
Right, the court can just arbitrate.
Look, you've got it in the sex deal right now, John. That's
and you got the maximums anyway.
No, but you mean in your indeterminate life or sex offender right now.
Yes,
I guess that's right.
Yes, and there is that case out of Lane County.
You're
going
with right,
life for.
Yeah, those sex offender statutes have been upheld.
Oh, yeah. You know, we've got some cases here in Oregon.
Yeah. Right. All right, we'll concede that point. What's the next?
I withdraw my...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve it tentatively with the caveat that we tentatively put in Class A felonies in sub 1.
And delete the words...
And take out... He's being sentenced for a Class A felony, and he's suffering from a severe personality disorder.
And the court finds it.
Yeah, the court finds that he's suffering from a severe personality disorder and so on. And then review it when we have finished grading the offenses.
Well, I had some real reservations on 3.
Well, that's where I thought we'd have the biggest discussion.
Well, let me ask you this. 3 are designed to get at the organized crime.
Yeah, right. And I've got extremely broad language there, but...
I think it's pretty good.
It's, but you see, now the Model Sentencing Act says the defendant is being sentenced for the crime of extortion, compulsory prostitution, selling or knowingly and unlawfully transporting narcotics. Then it goes on to say, or other felony committed as part of a continuing criminal activity in concert with one or more persons. Well, that might be construed as being limited, that other or other felony is being limited to that class of crimes that they've already sent out, but it might not either. So, it seems to me it's extremely broad.
How do you apply this to organized crime? You pick up the pusher, who's a member of the Costa Nostra, all you know about the guy really is that he's got an Italian name. How are you going to prove that he's part of the mafia network? How are you going to prove that he's part of a continuing team?
Well, now, in my next section, I talk about that a little one. Under sub 7, I say the defendant shall not be sentenced under subsection 3 of section 6 unless the court finds, on the basis of a pre-sentence investigation or the evidence in the case or on a pre-sentence hearing, that the defendant comes within the purview of subsection 3. In support of such findings, it may be shown that the defendant has had in his own name or under his control substantial income or financial resources not explained to the satisfaction of the court as derived from lawful activities or interests.
John, does this presuppose the defendant has a right of confrontation and assistance of counsel and cross-examination in connection with the findings in that pre-sentence report?
If he doesn't have it soon, we certainly soon will have, because of Supreme Court would say that hell, he's entitled to counsel and confrontation and everything else.
Wouldn't you?
Well, I'm not so sure about the pre-sentence investigation part of it.
Well, one of the things that...
Well, the court has said, and I think it's a Williams case, but when they make the pre-sentence report the basis for the enhancement of the penalty, I think then your constitutional safeguards are going to be brought into that.
I do too.
One of the things that really bothers me, and they talked about it in the ABA, is the fact that lots of times there is wrong information in pre-sentence reports, and defendants don't have any right to refute that. And I personally know some of the parole officers. Some of them are, one particular one is extraordinarily unstable. And the things he writes in his pre-sentence reports, I couldn't give any credibility whatsoever to if I had to stake my life on him. And I'd hope that maybe we get to a situation where maybe where we permit the defendant the right to examine the pre-sentence report at, say, a week before actual sentencing, and be given or be permitted to refute anything in there that he doesn't think is true.
So maybe New Jersey just held that. The law, the changing its law, when they refuse it to charge that they want that. I think that's a tendency.
Yeah,
it's coming. Now, certainly the ABA and the Model Penal Code have to use this. Defendant should have access and be able to make an adversary contest of the pre-sentence report.
Well, why don't we delete sub 3?
Well, I think it serves a good purpose.
All right, anyway, we've tentatively approved it. Go on to section 7. God, you guys will be here all day on sub 3.
Are there any questions about section 7?
Now, section 7 does not use this diagnostic facility that the Model Sentencing Act talks about. But I have incorporated some of the language that now appears in 137.112 to 115, the same kinds of standards are set up that we have in our statute now for your sexual offenders.
Who does this 30 days run against, or 60 days? Is that, can that be credited against you? Will we ever get into that? This will be prior to his being sentenced.
Yeah.
So it's on him, isn't it?
Now, what did I want to give him credit against his sentence?
Well, I think what I was saying.
Yeah. This doesn't deal with that problem.
Yeah. That's under procedure.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't make any change. I mean, I realize it's not the place to fight that battle. That's unfortunate.
You contemplate an inpatient examination, don't you? That's why you specify a state hospital.
Well,
yeah,
I
cleared that up, you know, in responsibility article, so it could be in a psychiatrist's office up in Portland.
Well, I think I've done the same thing. I said the court may appoint one or more qualified psychiatrists to examine the defendant, or may order that he be taken by the sheriff to a state hospital designated by the mental health division.
Or you could say to a facility.
Then I say when it's conducted at a state hospital. So I intended to give the court the discretion to have it done in the county, too.
Okay. What's your derivation? Existing statute?
I'm not really worried about subsection 3.
See, 137, 112 to 115 are the procedures that you go through to obtain information for sentencing under the sex offenses and enhanced penalties, indeterminate term for sex offenses. Same kind of statutory procedure.
In considering responsibility, didn't we grant the defendant the right to have his psychiatrist present to?
No, I don't think so.
I think that came out.